Welcome to the OMR Podcast International. My name is Scott Peterson, and I'm an editor at OMR. Today, we are talking with Ben Francis, CEO of Gymshark, a billion-dollar fitness fashion D2C brand from the UK. In many ways, it's the classic rags-to-riches story. Starting off in his parents' garage, Francis parlayed some fortune and a lot of hard work and determination into what Gymshark is today. Growing up outside of Birmingham, England, Francis comes from a family of entrepreneurs and as such began making websites and apps as side hustles while still a teen. And in fact, Gymshark was his seventh website, which shows that even massively successful people tend to fail more than they succeed. Now, to get Gymshark up and running, Francis had his mom and grandma teach him how to sew and then proceeded to sew Gymshark's clothes by hand for the first 2 years, along with his team, of course. Then, after a successful appearance at a fitness expo, which saw revenue skyrocket from 300 pounds a day to an incredible 30,000 in 30 minutes, he put down the needle and thread for good. In this episode, Francis talks with OMR CEO Philip Westermeyer about the strategic nuts and bolts Gymshark used to reach critical mass and then expand into the unicorn D2C brand that today employs 700 people around the world. From accidentally creating what is now the go-to way to build an online business with community building on social, offline events with fitness influencers, and product scarcity, to clever use of product names to leverage Google keywords and the power and promise of restraint in its social media content strategy, Philip and Francis go deep on the smallest details without losing sight of the big picture and where Francis and Gymshark are headed from here. All of that and more right now. In the OMR podcast.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, lovely to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a few things about your background. I mean, obviously, Gymshark is a huge fashion brand, and the name provides some insight where it's coming from. But I think the backgrounds, the backstory is a little surprising.
Yeah. So where do you want me to start? Shall I go right to the beginning?
Yeah.
So I grew up in the West Midlands of the UK. My parents were very, very hardworking. My mom works in the NHS, which is our national health service here. My grandparents both ran their own business. And as a young kid, we do work experience here. I think it's about 13, 14 years old. So I did that with my granddad. And what we would do is we would drive around and we'd line furnaces. So for those that you aren't aware, imagine a huge oven that heats big metal objects up. And we would line them with brick and ceramic fiber, basically. And when I was working with him, he would tell me all these stories about how he started his business, the risks that he had to take. So I was sort of exposed to entrepreneurship and business at a very young age. And the risks that he took were massive. They were absolutely huge. He risked sort of their house, their livelihood that my mom and her sister and my nan grew up in. So interestingly enough, when it came to sort of 16, 17, 18 years old for me, I wasn't as fussed about risk because I realized that he took so much more bigger risk than me. So I just started making things. I made websites, I made iPhone apps, and the seventh website that I make, and I make a point of talking about it being the seventh website because I feel like everyone seems to assume that it's like one thing tries and you try one thing and it blows up, which isn't the case. The seventh website that I created was Gymshark, and it's the website was built purely because I loved fitness. I absolutely adored fitness, and I loved watching fitness YouTubers. I watched Jeff Side over in the States, Matt Ogus and Chris Lovato in the US. There was a guy called Lex Griffin here in the UK, and there was one of my heroes actually was a German guy called Alon Gabay. I don't know if you've heard of him, and he was one of the original fitness guys, and basically spent the first 2 years of the brand hand making the clothes, and it's blown up into, to your point, a 1.4 plus billion dollar brand that it is today.
Okay, when did it all start? I mean, when was the first videos that you watched?
2012. So I obviously followed these guys before that, but it was 2012 when the brand was actually started. The other thing as well that I forgot to mention is when I started the brand, like I said, my thing, I actually set the bar incredibly low. I said, all I want to do is start a brand so I can be involved in fitness. There wasn't this sort of like huge, I guess, ambition that we now have. And what I did is I couldn't afford stock to put on the website. At the time, my job was a pizza delivery driver at Pizza Hut. So I was earning about £4 or £5 an hour. So I couldn't afford stock. So I loaded the website up with hundreds, it might even have been thousands of supplements, and drop shipped them from other retailers just so that we could get the website transacting and get essentially money flowing through the website. I say that, but it took months to get the first sale. And then after that, it was then buying a screen printer, buying a sewing machine, and then spending the next 2 years hand making the product.
And where did you get the first traffic from?
Oh, so loads of different places. It was a very, very typical entrepreneurial way to start the business. So Facebook was the main social platform of the day, which is weird now, because listen, Facebook's still massive, but you've got Instagram and TikTok and Snapchat and all these different things. Facebook and YouTube as well. This is a little bit of detail, but back in the day, you didn't have to pay for Google Shopping. So what you could do is you could basically have loads of different products and you could have different keywords in. So I think at the time, you might have seen over in the States, there was Jersey Shore, which was blowing up. So I'd call a product Jersey Shore Shorts, and then you'd have Gymshark Shorts. And one product would have like seven or eight different names. But because Google Shopping wasn't paid, it would rank all these different keywords. So people would search Jersey Shore and Gymshark Shorts would pop up essentially in Google. So there was a lot of sort of different, I don't know what you call it, hacks almost to get traffic to the website as well as social media.
So that's what we would call a social search engine optimization, basically, right?
Yes, exactly. And I didn't know that was what it was in the day. Yeah, I had no idea. But yeah, exactly that. We were just sort of working it out on the fly.
How old were you at the time?
So I was about 18 or 19 years old.
And you, were you like a fitness YouTuber yourself, or did you try to become one yourself?
No. So I fell in love with the gym at 16 years old. And the reason I fell in love with the gym is because so when I was 14, 15, I wasn't particularly good at school, and I wasn't misbehaving. I wasn't naughty or anything. It just never really aligned with me, and I couldn't do well at it. So I was getting sort of D's and E's in my exams. Now, at 16 years old, I joined the gym. And at the gym, I was taught by people there that you turn up 5 days a week, you do the workout, you essentially do as you're told, whether you're feeling good, bad, or indifferent. And I learned structure, I learned routine, and I learned how to force myself to do things that I didn't want to do. And I started to get results in the gym. So I then applied that to my school life, and all of a sudden, my grades went from D's and E's to A's and B's. So the gym at 16, 17 years old completely changed my life, and I just completely fell in love with it from that point on.
And how about making those clothes? I mean, you're not a fashion designer in that sense. You like the gym, and but you handcrafted your first clothes yourself.
Yeah, exactly that. So I was really lucky. So my mom knows how to sew. So she taught me how to sew. My nan was also doing a curtain making course at the time. So she also did a bit of sewing teaching. There was some local people that did screen printing. So I just sort of learned on the job. YouTube videos as well obviously helped. I just really wanted to make clothes that fitted us, because no one made bodybuilding clothes that were fitted. They were all massive for either huge bodybuilders, or there was more larger sportswear brands that would make football or basketball clothes. And it just didn't fit the gym physique that I was creating for myself.
Mm-hmm. And the name Gymshark, also like your own invention?
Yeah. And this is such a boring story. People ask about how the name came about. And I always say, I wish I could tell you a story about how I was swimming off the coast somewhere and I saw a shark. And it's just nothing like that. I saw an American football mascot, and it was like a big muscular cat. It was like a cheetah, I think, or a tiger. And I just looked at it and I thought, oh, wow, imagine if that was a shark. And then I went on GoDaddy and I put in Gymshark. Gymshark.co.uk was available. It was about £3.50. And I just bought it because it was short, it had a ring to it, it sounded cool. And like I said, at the time, because it was the seventh website that I'd made and all the others had failed, I think a part of me just thought, you know, I'm just going to give it a go. I don't really know how it's going to go. So it didn't feel like a big decision at the time. Whereas now, obviously, looking back, it was a huge decision.
Can you, the first six websites, were they all like similar intention, or can you drop one, two examples?
Cool. So the first one that I made was a car, it sold car registrations and license plates. I did another one that was like a fitness forum, so almost like a bodybuilding.com forum, a mini sort of fitness social network. I made two iPhone apps that were both around fitness. One was about how to lose weight. One was a general basically workout planner. You could plan workouts and hit a button and it would populate your calendar with a workout. There was a few other bits like that. So it was for the most part, they were fitness related. And it was a combination of, I just loved fitness, but I also loved making things. And I loved learning to build websites. I loved learning to build apps. And Gymshark was just the one that did well.
And you know, when did Gymshark really, you know, start, you know, developing its traction? I mean, when did you realize this thing is more than the first sticks?
So we handmade the clothes for 2 years, and towards sort of about a year and a half, 2 years in, so as kids in Birmingham, where we grew up, there's an incredible expo called Body Power. And at the time, it was one of the best fitness expos in the world. It was up there. I think the best two events were probably Body Power in Birmingham and FIBO in Cologne. I don't know if you've ever visited FIBO in Cologne.
Yeah.
And we would go there every single year. And 1 year, I just thought, I had this gut-wrenching feeling that we had to be there. So I went up to the show organizing stand that was over in the corner. And I said, right, I've got this small brand. I've just started it. And I really want to exhibit here. I want our brand to be here. And then the guy said to me, yep, that's fine. It's going to be £3,000. And that was like more than all the money that we had at the time. And I just thought, you know what? I'm going to do it. I've got 12 months to pay for it. I'm going to work out a way of making this work. So we signed on to it. We did it. And over the year, we handmade clothes and we worked incredibly hard and we started to get regular sales. Come round to the event the next year, we'd earned enough money to not only pay for the floor space, but we'd booked an incredible stand, and we'd also had a little bit of extra money. Now, we used that money to ask the YouTubers that we admired and adored to come to the event. So we flew over a couple of guys from the States. Lex came down from the north of the UK, and Alon came over from Germany. And these guys just came to the event just because, again, they'd never been there before, and everyone knew that the Body Power was the best event around. We did this event, and I mean, to cut a long story short, we were doing about £300 a day in revenue before the event. The event went so incredibly well that afterwards, when I turned the website back on, we did £30,000 of revenue in the first 30 minutes of the website being live. We completely sold out of everything. And that was the moment where I realized that we were onto something truly special.
And how come you had the website shut down during the event?
Because this just shows the size of the business. Because we weren't at home to make the product, we had to turn the website off because people would be okay. Ordering because we couldn't make the product. It's crazy, isn't it?
I mean, so in the end, the ignition or the starting point of Gymshark is a live event. It's a show.
And you know what? So looking back, at the time I had no idea what was going on. Now, looking back, what we'd done is we'd accidentally created the marketing mix that we very much use today, right? So we had product that was launching at the event, which wasn't actually available online because the website was off. So we'd sort of accidentally created scarcity. We did the in real life event, so the core lifters were there. And then after the event, by the way, me, the staff, the athletes, and the fans, we'd all go and lift. And we'd lift in the gym together as a group, and we were building a community. And people would post on Facebook and so on about the lifting with the Gymshark guys. And all of a sudden, Gymshark was blowing up that weekend and going viral over social media. So all of that, you had scarcity, you had the influencers, you had the offline event, you had the community being built on social media. We'd accidentally created what is now, to many online companies, the go-to way of marketing a business. We'd sort of struck gold.
And I mean, in the following days and months and years, did you basically only expand this strategy, or which most important elements did you add?
Yeah, we did. So I'll never forget it. So we finished that event at Body Power, and we thought, right, that event was so incredibly successful. Now what? And then anyone that knows anything about fitness and bodybuilding knows you go to FIBO in Cologne. FIBO in Cologne is the biggest fitness event in the world. I don't know what the numbers are like now, obviously, because of COVID and everything. But at the time, there must have been about 250,000 people that would go to this event. It was something like that, 250,000 people from all across Europe. So I was calling up the guys over in Cologne. I was like, right, so Body Power, I need another stand next year. FIBO Cologne, what do I have to do to get in the door, sort of thing? So we did the FIBO event in Cologne. And again, same thing. We brought all the athletes about. Cologne went incredibly well. Then after that, we booked Body Power again, FIBO again. We booked into Columbus, Ohio, Los Angeles, Melbourne and Australia. And we just expanded and expanded and expanded. And we actually spent the next year just traveling the world.
And it was always event-based. I mean, you basically backpacked, or how you call that, you piggybacked on your existing events. You didn't even create your own events. It was piggybacking on others.
Exactly that. And then what we were doing is, so we were in Cologne, and again, we would finish up and we would go and live with everyone. And we were creating these communities across the world. And even now, you see hotspots. You see the UK as a hotspot. You see Cologne in Germany and Dusseldorf just over the road as a hotspot. You see California as a hotspot. You see Columbus. Melbourne, Australia. So all these hotspots of Gymshark community, core community, funnily enough, are where all these original events were that we did.
And when did you stop making those clothes yourself? I mean, when did you ask other people to make those clothes for you?
So it was after the success of the first event. And that's when, and we'd done bits before. We'd worked with different factories and people had done huge favors to me around the world. But the time where we officially stopped making our own clothes was just after that first event, and that really helped because then we could travel the world and have things produced. My brother would stay at home with a couple of other guys and ship out the orders whilst we were essentially just doing, I guess, a marketing world tour.
And then where Gymshark clothes made today?
So they're made all over the world now. So we make a lot in Europe, we make a lot in places like Portugal, Turkey, then the vast majority of our cotton, for example, comes from the United States. We do a lot in places like Taiwan, Bangladesh. So now, because of our scale, we're very, very distributed in our production. And then in terms of the distribution, that comes into centers around the world. We've got DCs in Belgium. We've got DCs in the UK, in Canada, in Australia. And we're also opening up two new distribution centers in the United States soon as well.
And are you to that day, are you the, like, obviously the founder, also the CMO basically, and also the head designer, the creative chief?
Yeah, so I was. I'm not anymore. So we've got an incredible leadership team now. So I'm still full time in the business every single day, and I've done a bunch of different roles. So I've done a chief marketing role, I've done a chief product role, chief brand role. I work very closely with our data team as well. So I essentially have focused the last sort of, you know, 8 years on, for the most part, the front end of the business.
And when did Instagram kick in? I mean, from today, it looks like Instagram must be a huge lift for you.
Yeah, Instagram's great. We were, again, an earlier adopter onto Instagram. We saw Instagram very early on as being a great platform moving forward. Instagram is brilliant. We do a lot on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram. TikTok is huge for us. It's a brilliant, brilliant platform. They're great to work with as well. So we definitely do a lot there as well.
Which platform would hurt the most if it was taken away from you?
Oh, I've never been asked that question before. that's a good question. I don't know. Listen, I think Instagram is great. So I think probably if it was today, it would be Instagram. But when I look forward, I think TikTok is the opportunity.
And how do you present yourself on Gymshark? I mean, obviously now you have different accounts, Gymshark woman, different sub accounts. But like, what's the recipe today to like create large audiences?
So the one thing I would say is I think you have to be really aware of who the people that are following you are. I know I've heard people talk about almost just post every day. And I think for some people, I think that can work incredibly well. Personally, I think you really need to, I think one brilliant post is worth significantly more than 100 average posts. Mm-hmm. And just because of the nature of the algorithm, the way that things can go viral, I think you have to just think about quality of content and everything that you do. If you go on Gymshark Train, for example, on Instagram, or Gymshark Women on Instagram, or Gymshark on TikTok, you'll see that we're even though the core Gymshark ethos is the same, we approach the social platforms and even accounts in very different ways because there are different people following us for different reasons.
How many people do you have working in marketing in general?
Oh, in marketing, I don't know off the top of my head. If I had to answer, so what we do is we actually split between brand and marketing. So if you're talking about the whole front end marketing focus, you're probably looking at about 250 people.
Wow. And all together in the company?
700.
Okay. Okay. And so 250 in marketing. And that means you have like a dedicated team for TikTok and for a dedicated team for Snap and for Instagram.
Correct. Exactly that. And listen, we do a lot in-house. So we have one of the best in-house creative teams I've ever seen. We have incredible in-house videographers, incredible in-house photographers, creatives, project managers, social managers, advertisement managers. Yeah. So it's a very big team. A lot of the reason why it's so big is because so much of what we do is in-house.
Okay. Okay. And, but I mean, how much of your success would you attribute to marketing and the whole social media game and the direct-to-consumer relationship, and how much to the product?
50-50. So I think if I look back, we have and had an incredibly unique product. Our quality is incredibly, incredibly high. And we were speaking to a consumer group that just wasn't being spoken to by some of the larger brands. So we had incredible product. Like, it's all well and good having brilliant marketing, but if the product doesn't stand up, then people won't come back. And we have great retention. So people will buy Gymshark and they'll buy it again and again and again because they're so happy with the product. So I do think it is 50-50. And we've innovated in both areas. So yeah, we have an incredibly unique, or we had an incredibly unique approach to market, and it's becoming more common now. I think people are seeing the value in a direct-to-consumer community brand. Go on.
What's your best-selling item, and which piece did you sell the most over all these years?
So this is going to be a boring answer for you. What you find is we make some beautiful, incredible, colorful, incredibly well-designed products. But when it comes to the end of the year, your best sellers will always be a men's black t-shirt and a women's pair of black leggings. Honestly, it's always the way.
But obviously the logo matters. I mean, if you yes. call it a black t-shirt, then you would get that black t-shirt more or less, at least style-wise, everywhere. But you wouldn't get it with the logo.
Exactly.
So the logo makes all the difference. The brand makes all the difference then.
Yeah, well, it's definitely the logo and the brand, but equally the fit, the material, the way that it's made, communicated. The thing with Gymshark is it's like being a part of a club. It's a group of people that are working towards physical and mental improvement. And the gym, and I found this when I was 16 years old and walking into the gym for the first time, the gym can be quite a intimidating place to go, especially if you've never lifted weights before. So particularly for me, I'm into weightlifting, and Gymshark produces running gear, lifting gear, cardio gear, CrossFit, everything now. But it is intimidating to go into the gym for the first time because it feels like you don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And there's this thing when you buy into Gymshark, it's like you are part of the community. And I think that definitely helps people when they are sort of starting out on their fitness journey.
Mm-hmm. Who would you call your biggest competitor? I mean, are you competing against Adidas, Nike? Who do you look to when you look at your market?
So, I understand why you asked that question, because I guess from a consumer point of view, you'd look at a sportswear brand and you think that they're very similar, and in many respects they are. But one thing I would say is there's a big differentiation between a gymwear brand and a sportswear brand. So Adidas, for example, are, as far as I'm aware, the best when it comes to football, right? They're incredible in terms of their product, their boots, their clothes. They're brilliant at what they do. Now, Gymshark isn't built to make sportswear and football wear. It's about fitness wear and gym wear. If you want to go on a 5K run, if you want to, you know, lift weights, if you want to be a bodybuilder, if you just want to go to the gym every other week because it helps with your mental and physical fitness, I think Gymshark's the best in the world when it comes to that. And what the other thing I would say from more of a commercial perspective is an Adidas, for example, is built in a very, very different way to Gymshark. Gymshark is a community-led, direct-to-consumer, purpose-led brand. We only sell through our website. And when you buy into Gymshark again, you're really a part of that community. Adidas, on the other hand, they work in a completely different way where they work through many retailers all the way around the world. They produce product that works in golf, in football. Do you know what I mean? It's a much wider or a broader proposition. And they just fundamentally work in a completely different way to us. So it's really difficult. I don't know who our competitors are at the moment. I think we're in a bit of a unique space that we've sort of inadvertently created. But yeah.
I mean, you must have been approached quite a bit by retailers asking you to sell your clothes directly to them as well. I mean, not to the end consumer, but also to like major stores or chains or all that.
Exactly that. We were. And we did something a few years ago, which I'm really proud of. And I would advise any entrepreneurs listening to really think carefully about this, is we drew out how we saw the future of brands, communities, and retail. And one of the things that we thought wouldn't happen is we didn't see the future of brands as being a brand that was built in the old model. So the old high street model, when you know, many of our parents and grandparents would purchase their product from the high street, what a lot of the greatest brands in the world would do is they would create as much product as they can to put into as many stores as they can to please as many people as they can. And that was an incredible method of growth back during the high street era. But what that led to is slow, cumbersome brands that produce a huge, broad range of products and don't truly understand their consumer, because you'll always have the layer of the retailer between, right? So a large brand might sell product into a retail store, and at the end of the month, they'll know that that retail store sold 10,000 black t-shirts, but they don't know who to, they don't know why they were buying it, and there's no connection there. So we thought that the future of brands was a community-focused direct-to-consumer model. So yes, we have had lots of retailers offer some really big numbers to stock our product, and we could have grown the business significantly more quickly than what we have. But because we don't see it as the future of the way that brands work, we essentially said no to those requests.
Never all these years.
No, we don't work with retailers. We did a small couple of deals in the first sort of 12 months of being a business, but since then, it's every single sale goes through the Gymshark website.
Okay. And in any other outlets, I mean, you sell directly on Instagram or any like on other online way to sell except for your website?
No, we're launching an app soon, but everything is through Gymshark own channels. No third parties, essentially.
Okay. And did you ever think about like spilling over into other areas? I mean, you just call it the gym wear and weightlifting wear, but look at your Instagram account, and the stuff you wear looks a little bit like you could also wear to the office today. In digital companies, that's the way people come into the office.
Yeah, and I wear it every day to the office. Exactly. Yeah, it's more like that athleisure trend, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That was what I was looking for. Athleisure. Yeah. So it's basically become like everyday clothing, right? For office jobs as well. That's something you would accept for your products to be worn to the office. You wouldn't complain about that.
Correct. Yeah. So we design our product with purpose in mind. So we'll design, you know, men's shorts, understanding that you need to be able to squat in them, you need to be able to deadlift in them, and bottoms and so on. So it will always have that purpose built into every thread. However, if people decide to wear it to work, to your point, they are more than ever. I do it every single day because people want to be comfortable. They want to look good. And a lot of people are now going to work and then the gym immediately after work as well. I think it's great that people are wearing our product outside of the gym as well.
Okay. And it seems like a major trend that you're profiting from.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, we've made some brilliant decisions in building this brand, but equally we've been extremely lucky. And I think this is a huge tailwind to your point in terms of on a macro scale, people are wearing fitness wear outside of the gym. So you're right. We've definitely benefited from that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then in terms of growth, can you like give us some numbers over the past years? I mean, maybe revenue wise and whatever you can share.
Yeah. So Gymshark's grown rapidly. We were the fastest growing business in the UK a few years ago. A couple of years after that, we were the fastest growing profits. So we're a very profitable business as well, which I'm really proud of, despite the constant reinvestment in the brand. And it feels like an outdated figure saying this now, but because we're in June, but last calendar year, Gymshark through its website alone sold $500 million worth of product. So it's been a huge growth curve. And that's basically naught to $500 million in 8 years. And, you know, we're halfway through 2021 now and we're seeing even more incredible growth.
And where is that all coming from? I mean, the old pattern that you described, is it still like there's just so much, wind under your wings that carries you even further and further? Yeah. Or did you like open other other engines and other ideas? Or is it just like there's so much wind in that field?
Yeah. So, well, when we first started, we only sold menswear and it was a very small range. We added women's wear. We've expanded our range. We're expanding into accessories. The original core areas we did the events are our huge areas. So the UK is massive for us. The US, Germany is huge. huge. We have incredible support in Germany. I always love going to Germany. We did an event before the pandemic in Frankfurt, and it was absolutely brilliant. So thank you guys for all of your support as well. Australia, Scandinavia, they're the sort of key markets for us.
And any cooperations with like influencers outside of the fitness field, any pop stars, rappers that wear your clothes?
I've seen people wear them more out of choice rather than sort of deals with us. But yes, like, tons of people wear them now, and it's really cool to see. Like you say, it's this whole thing of the gym is now more than the gym. Like, to your point, musicians are wearing it. People are wearing it to and from work. It's really cool to see.
But you're not like officially cooperating. You don't have a testimonial. It's not irgendwie not some rapper like going on a tour in Gymshark clothes.
No, not like that. But to your point, whereas before it was the lifters. Now we're working with CrossFitters. We're running with runners. So there's a guy called Heller who we work very closely with that's just ran the entire length of the United States in Gymshark, and that's like, it's just incredible, right? We work with some amazing people, sort of like gamers and things like that. Anyone that's on a journey, mental or physical, we want to help support you on that journey.
So but you're reaching out to them and you're providing them with clothes, but not with money. Is that how it
varies. So some people will just buy the product because they love it. Some people will get in touch and say, hey, do you want to do this? Some of the athletes that we'll work with will work with on longer term contracts. So yeah, they'll be paid. They'll be on a 1, 2, 3, 4 year contract. It really varies. It really varies on the individual.
And where do you think this can go?
Well, my aim is, I think this can be the biggest and the greatest fitness wear brand in the world. I really do. I think we've got an incredible community of tens of millions direct members of the Gymshark community, hundreds of millions if you include the athletes following. I think we can be the greatest fitness community in the world, and I want this to be the brand that really does embody mental and physical development. The gym changed my life, and I would love the gym to continue to change lives around the world. And that doesn't mean you have to be a 5-6 day a week gym goer. You don't have to be a bodybuilder. You might go once a month. You might go twice a month, whatever it is. I just think that the lessons that we can learn in the gym, the difference it can make to you mentally and physically is huge. And I want to inspire as many people to do that as possible.
You're following what's happening to Reebok these days? I mean, Adidas is selling Reebok, and I mean, from a valuation standpoint, they must be in your neighborhood now.
Loosely, I don't know. I did hear that they were being sold, but I've got no idea what valuation, if I'm honest.
Okay, but I mean, you've followed the Reebok story from like
Reebok's
a major brand.
Yeah, it's an old British brand, isn't it? I saw Adidas bought it, and I know that they were using it to run. It was sort of like the CrossFit and MMA sort of stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, other than that, if I'm honest, I don't know too much more.
Any other direct-to-consumer brands, or even in other verticals, other industries that you follow that you think are doing a good job?
Ooh, who do I like? Let me think. There's a few cool brands. There's a brand in the UK which I really like, and it's very expensive, but it's really cool. It's conceptual stuff, and it's called Volbach. So they do sort of conceptual clothing. It's like fireproof bottoms, stab-proof jackets. It's just super, super conceptual clothing. A lot of the product isn't like, it's a bit over the top, but I think it's really interesting to see. I mean, I ride motorcycles, so there's cool brands over here. Bodeskins, who sort of do jackets. There's a helmet company called Rorock, who look really cool as well.
And they're all D2C.
And what was that, sorry?
They're all D2C, but they're all founded recently.
Yeah, they're all direct to consumer.
And I mean, like one typical trait of a direct to consumer brand is collaborating with other brands to share audiences. Is that something that you do, that you like collaborate with one of these brands, for instance, or like other, you know, founders and their audiences?
So I think it's something we would love to do, but because we've grown so quickly, if I'm honest, we haven't done enough of it in the past. But yeah, you're right. I would love to do more collaborations. I think it's a really good way of building. I mean, it feels like at the moment it is a bit of the age of the collaboration. You've got, there's a really cool brand over in New York called Kith. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Running Street.
Exactly. And they're massively, if you're looking at probably setting the benchmark for collaborations, I think Kith have to be the best in the world right now, don't they?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, they're doing it with Coca-Cola and the New York Knicks, basketball, everything. I mean, they're across the universe.
Well, their collaborations. BMW. Yeah, exactly. They're collaborations you don't expect, but they just make sense. And I think that's really cool.
So there's like, if somebody from Mercedes listening, you would do like a Mercedes or like an Audi collaboration?
I've got no idea. I'm open-minded to anything.
But nothing so far.
We've not done any, honestly, we've done no collaboration. We did one, saying that, I tell a lie, we did one a few years ago with Gold's Gym in Venice, California, which was really cool. We learned a lot from it. I really enjoyed it. We did an event. We did a collaborative range. And that's it, really. But listen, 100% open-minded to more collaborations. I think it's an incredible way to learn and to grow.
What's your perspective on stores?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think that stores, if they're done right, can be incredible. I think they can be absolutely brilliant. There's a few stores here in the UK which are just utterly brilliant. There's a few that inspire me. Have you heard of the Soho House Group?
Yeah.
There's one in Berlin, I think.
Yeah.
They're incredible because they're very, I could pop you into, Soho House Berlin or Barcelona or London, and they all look quite different, but you'd know that they're all part of the same group. And the way they approach aesthetic and interior design and service, I think is incredible. I think they're doing offline incredibly well. There's a store in East London called The Bike Shed. So I think I've mentioned I'm into my motorcycles. And it's like a community hub for anyone that's into motorcycles. And I think that's really, really cool as well. So, yeah, I think offline or retail done right and stores done right can be brilliant. But I think the problem is now is too many people have approached the store mentality from a place of utility. And what I mean by that is if you want to go and buy a product, most people now aren't going to stores because you could just buy that same product online. It will be delivered to you just as quickly and it's way more convenient. So I think you need to offer more than just convenience when it comes to stores.
I mean, you recently opened a place called a lifting club. I mean, when I follow you on Instagram, I see that it's basically a gym that you've started. And I mean, is that your first step into like offline owned properties?
Yeah, so that's really cool, actually. So that is the lifting club is next door to our office and it's on our sort of campus in the West Midlands here. And it's a staff and basically plus one, plus two of each staff member. It's a staff only gym, basically. And you're right, not only is that incredible for the staff and the workforce and their friends and family, but it's a little bit of a test of, okay, so if we were to do something offline, how would it work? And now we've got this internal test that we can use and run every single day. So it's sort of a dual pronged approach. So we're learning a lot from that. And by the way, I also think it's probably one of the best, if not the best staff gym in the world.
Mm-hmm. And you're thinking of you know, opening more of that around the world?
I don't know, if I'm honest. We've been running the lifting club for a while. The vast majority of its life, it's unfortunately been in lockdown due to COVID. But I'm open-minded to anything with things like this.
You just recently said that data plays an important role for you.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is data for you? What data do you look at?
I mean, data in every sense of the word. So we could be looking at web visitors. We could be looking at revenue. You know, we could be looking at what products are selling the best. Like, is there more opportunity for different types of products? So if our lifting stringers are doing particularly well, do we need to double down on that? It could be, you know, usage of our conditioning app and fitness app. Are people using it regularly? Are people dropping off? What are things like that like? It really varies.
What's the core or key KPIs that you look at like every day or every week to understand the business?
So it could be things like stock turn, how quickly are we moving through our stock, you know, super basic things, revenue, gross margin, all these sorts of things. It's fairly standard across retail businesses. Lifetime value, for a community-led brand, it's all around community growth. How big is the Gymshark community and the wider community? Which channels are growing the most quickly? Which are engaging at the highest rates? Because like following great and everything, but if people aren't engaging with you, it's fairly pointless. So engagement's really important to us as well.
So every day you check into your Instagram app or a TikTok app and look at the growth numbers, interaction numbers?
Yeah, I check regularly. I wouldn't check every day, but I would sort of have reports sent over to me every so often and I'm always interested to have a look.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, talk about a bit like the investment side of the business. I mean, you started the business by yourself and no external investors. And what's been the development there?
Yeah, no, well, so the business was founded by myself and Lewis, who was the co-founder. And we had no investment whatsoever. After about, I don't know how many years, might have been 3 years, 4 years, Lewis ended up leaving the business. And then we recently took investment last year. Lewis sold out his shares early on. He held on to a small percentage and he sold out of the rest of it last year. And we brought in our first investment. And that was when the brand was valued at the 1.45 billion during that round. So that was our first ever investment.
Well, it was fresh money to grow the business. It wasn't like all a secondary.
No, so the majority of it was essentially for Lewis to move on and focus on different things. And the main reason, if I'm honest, which General Atlantic have really bought is brilliant experience. They're globally a very large business. So they have great understanding of the North American market, of the like the APAC market. So yeah, they've really helped us build strength in depth in the business as well.
And I mean, obviously, General Atlantic is a big name. They just basically send you an email and said, look, we like what you do and let's talk. And then all of a sudden you like that?
I mean, there must have
been a lot of people before that.
So they did get in touch, funnily enough. Andrea, who's a guy at General Atlantic, did message me. Unfortunately, and he never lets me forget it, I didn't actually respond. I didn't see the message, which is terrible of me. I feel really bad. But we came to the point where, and I was told this a few years ago, I was told if you're ever going to bring on an investor or raise money or anything like that, then do it when you don't need the money, because it means that you're not, it's not about being in a position of power, but it gives you flexibility, right? If things aren't going well, you don't have to do it. So we thought, right, we don't need it now, but we really have global ambitions. So we essentially started off a process, and we said to a group of companies that this is what we're looking to do. And a group of companies came back to us and we started having conversations, and then we sort of whittled it down a little bit to a final three companies. And then eventually the final one was General Atlantic. And the reason that we went with General Atlantic were the reasons I just mentioned: their global, outreach, their stretch, their competency across the world is just incredible. But the main reason why we went with General Atlantic is because culturally they completely understood the Gymshark brand. They're absolutely brilliant to work with. I couldn't recommend them enough.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, all these years before they stepped in, how did you finance the business? I mean, it's like one of those typical problems that you have, especially in commerce or once you produce your own stuff, you always have to pre-finance a new production, a new series of products. Did the bank do that, or like how did that work?
No. So it was all organic. So I saved at Pizza Hut. I saved up the money for to run the business. I saved and saved and saved. We built a profitable model, and we just allowed it to snowball and snowball over the years to come. So we never took borrowing. We didn't do anything like that. And the reason that we could do that is because we built a sustainable, profitable model.
And what makes the model so profitable is this, that there's no middleman. I mean,
exactly that. You remove the layer. You'll often find that when people sell into retailers, they'll sell into the retailers, and the retailers will essentially double their money on the product. Because we didn't have that, it meant that we could sell the highest quality of product at a cheaper price than some of our larger competitors, whilst also remaining profitable and high in growth.
And of all these years, you've become your own brand yourself. I mean, Ben Francis, I think there's thousands of, hundreds of thousands of people across the world that know you. Mm-hmm. What role did that play?
So I was always, I didn't really want to be on social media personally. I love making things and I love my role at Gymshark. Mm-hmm. And we did a world tour and I was in Dublin, of all places. And there was a lad that came up to me and he was writing an essay for university on the Gymshark story and the growth of the brand. And he said to me, will you do a video that talks about how you started Gymshark? And that's it, because I just need it for my thing. And I said, I'll tell you what, I will do this video. I'm going to do the video because I would get it asked all the time. Everyone would say, how did the company start? I would love to know the story. So I said, right, I'm going to record this video and I'm going to do it. My fiance helped me with it. She was my girlfriend at the time. She recorded it. She's on YouTube. She helped me edit it, everything. I recorded this one video and I put it on YouTube and it just blew up. It got 2+ million views, I think. And to be honest, ever since then, I've continued posting. I post on Instagram. I post on YouTube. I try and tell the story as best I can. I The reason that I double down on it now is because I always think I would have loved to have been able to see the vlogs of someone running a billion-dollar brand when I was younger. So I think I'm trying to do that to give to the next generation. And I've been fortunate to have conversations with people that have watched my videos and followed me on the social channels that have, you know, either not made mistakes in their business or been able to grow more quickly and help inspire those. And to me, that's really, really fulfilling. And it's something that's really important to me that I can hopefully try and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs and just give someone a real transparent view in what life is like founding and running a billion-dollar business.
And it gives your brand an unfair advantage because the Adidas CEO or the Reebok CEO don't do that.
Yeah, no, they don't. They don't. And I'm going to be honest, I've never understood why. I think, maybe it's different because I sort of founded the brand and I've been there throughout and I'm massively emotionally involved. But I just think it's so cool. And I'm interested in what you think, Philip, as well. I think it's fascinating to be able to see the inside of these businesses. And I just want to be able to give that to others.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, you see it from the most valuable companies in the world. I mean, Elon Musk shows the way, right? I mean, you follow him?
Yeah, I follow him. He's on Twitter and he's mental. But it's cool, isn't it? It makes you realize they're normal people. They're normal people that just work incredibly hard. And I think it's, fascinating. I don't know. It's fascinating. Okay. Oh yeah, maybe not Elon. Maybe he's not normal. But regardless, we built our office and I recorded the whole thing. We built the gym. I recorded the whole thing. I've talked about the athletes, the events, and I think it's just cool that people could. There might be someone that's got a business out there that wants to make an office and they don't know really how to do it or how to approach it. And hopefully, by watching my video, they might learn one or two things. I think that's cool. I'm also very transparent about everything from shareholding structures and all these things, and again it's because no one else talks about it, so it's not going to do any harm. It doesn't make a difference to me if you know the shareholding or not. I just think it's interesting and hopefully it can help other people in running their business.
How many shares do you hold? I mean, how many percent of the company?
So now I hold just over 70%.
Okay. And then did that give you access to other circles? I mean, now that you're like a visible person now with also like a substantial net worth, what was the most noticeable developments there? I mean, who approached you? What changed your life there?
So the vast majority of people that follow my channel are young people that are looking to start their own business. So that's been really cool because it's actually given me opportunities to meet a lot of these small businesses. And I found that fascinating. And what people don't realize is, for me to spend time with someone that's building their own business, I learn as much from them as they do from me. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to, again, turbocharge my learning by spending time with these people. And, I think as well, it helps people feel more connected with the brand. So I think people buy into the brand a little bit more on the story because they can literally see it unfold in front of their very eyes. And I just think, if you go back to some incredible, one of the best sportswear brands, we've talked about Adidas. How cool would it have been if we could go back and watch videos of the founders building the business in the early days? And I know it wasn't possible because of how old the business is, but these videos last forever and people can watch them forever. And hopefully when Gymshark is one of the greatest brands and communities in the world, people will look back at these videos as to how it was built and the decisions that we made and the mistakes that we made as well and be inspired by it.
I mean, if you look at the valuation right now, you just mentioned it, one point, maybe it's grown a little bit. When was the financing round? 2020, right?
Yeah, so it was about a year ago. So a year ago, we were at $1.45 billion.
So let's say, if rapid growth, maybe you're at 2 billion now. So that's only 5x away from where Puma is today on the stock market.
Exactly.
Market cap. Do you look at, for instance, what the On guys do with the tennis and jogging shoes from Switzerland?
No, so I've never actually used them. I've heard of them, and I think what they're doing is cool. But if I'm honest, I don't know. But I think the design of the product is cool.
And for your own brand building, which channel there is? Does LinkedIn play a role for you?
So it does, but not in terms of sort of front end. Product, so it's great for recruitment and for me, for personal branding as a business owner, it's brilliant. If you said to me, I think you asked earlier about social networks and which one would you lose, from a personal perspective, YouTube would be number one, but LinkedIn would be a very, very close number two. To me, I'd actually say LinkedIn in many respects is more important than Instagram.
Seriously?
it's absolutely brilliant. I think it's a brilliant social network, and it's you get incredible reach on LinkedIn. It's really surprising, and you can grow very, very quickly.
Any other networks or media outlets that you've been present in? I mean, did you do TV a lot?
No, not really. Not too much around TV. Personally, for me, it's YouTube is number one. I think YouTube is just brilliant. LinkedIn, Instagram, that's where I'll spend my time. And as a company, we haven't done too much on TV, just because I think we're just growing quickly. We just haven't got around to it. I think we will at some point, but just not yet.
Do you do sponsorings? I mean, sports, do you sponsor athletes or teams or anything?
Yeah, we do. So we work, not teams, but we work with individuals. So you've got a lady called Katie Taylor, who's one of the best boxers of all time. She's absolutely incredible. We work very closely with her. You've got Ryan Garcia, who's an American athlete based out in California. Again, an incredible, incredible boxer. And then we work with athletes in the sense of YouTube fitness stars and people like that as well.
But you wouldn't go into like regular...
As in sports athletes.
Yeah.
Other than the boxers, no, we haven't yet.
Why boxing?
Because we've made a sort of conscious effort to look into combat sports. It's been something that's been very close to the brand. We've worked with brilliant combat sports people before, Darren Till in mixed martial arts. It's just something that's very close to the brand, because the way that they train is actually very similar in many ways to powerlifters and bodybuilders.
Okay. Do a lot of classic traditional brands approach you and ask you about how they can transform their company or their business into a D2C business?
Not in our space, but other brands do. So I don't know, some that might not be related to us, and a lot of smaller brands as well will sort of get in touch and ask a few questions as well.
And what is your like 1, 2, 3 advice to them? I mean, is there anything that repeats or that comes back all the time?
It really varies. But like I said, for me, it's about having a real good understanding of the customer and the community. I think that's massive. And I think we've been blessed in many ways, because I always have been the customer and the community. Like even now, I'll go on the Gymshark website and I'll buy the stuff because I love it. Even if I didn't work at Gymshark, I would buy Gymshark. I would follow Gymshark because it inspires me seeing the stories of the individuals and the people and the groups on the social channels. So that would be the main thing, just a thorough and deep understanding of the customer and the community. And again, we've been lucky because I am it, and a lot of the people that work at Gymshark are the community.
One thing I hear a lot is you have to be really responsive. I mean, so if people like write to you on Instagram or write to you on LinkedIn, like there's this Gary Vaynerchuk myth that you have to respond and try to respond to everybody and then spend hours in a day like responding to social media messages and posts. Do you do that?
I get lots of messages, probably not as many as Gary. I can't imagine how many messages Gary gets. I respond to as many as I can within reason, but I do work all hours of the day as well. So I definitely don't respond to all of them.
And you don't see it as part of your work. I mean, in some cases, I look at D2C creators here in Germany, and they see it as part of their work life to spend like 4 hours of a working day to basically interact with the community.
That's interesting. So I do it after work. I'll do it just like after work when I'm chilling out, just more because I'm interested. I find it fun. I do it in the gym and things like that. But yeah.
You just talked about like inspiring the next generation. What's your number one takeaway that you want to like pass on?
For me, this is the most important thing for the next generation is, whilst you're young, I think you need to just try things. Don't fall for some sort of illusion that Gymshark just sort of happened out of nowhere. It was these 6 failures beforehand. The likelihood of anyone starting anything and the first thing succeeding, or even the second thing or the third thing succeeding, is extremely, extremely low. You have to be prepared to fail, and you have to be prepared to try new things. And I think those that can fail and come back with enthusiasm and excitement and go again, because they're truly passionate, I think those are the ones that succeed.
And can you imagine expanding into other areas? I mean, now you're doing clothing. I mean, it feels like you have this community and you can do more with that.
Yeah, listen, we'll definitely be expanding into other areas and a more broader approach to fitness. But those plans are sort of currently in progress at the moment.
Last question. I mean, you're making quite a lot of money. Are you also like investing some of that money back as an investor into other companies?
So I've not done any of that yet. I'm definitely open-minded to it, but I've not done it yet. But it's something that I'm definitely going to be looking at in the next year or two.
And is there other entrepreneurs that inspire you? I mean, you look at like Phil Knight, who founded Nike, or like people like that?
Yeah, I think he's massively inspiring. Yeah, I'm inspired by, you know, the people that you'll know about, Warren Buffett, Elon Musk. I mean, I'm inspired by my parents, by my grandparents. To be honest, I'm inspired by the people that I work with, the Gymshark athletes. I really try and learn something new from every single person that I meet. And again, I can take little bits of inspiration as well from everyone that I meet too.
Okay. Okay. Ben, thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you. This has been amazing. It's been really cool to chat. You need to come and visit Gymshark HQ at some point. You need to come and fly up.
Yeah, that's in Birmingham, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And you plan on staying in Birmingham? I mean, is Birmingham a good place for that?
Yes. Yeah, I love it. It's absolutely brilliant. It's where I grew up and it's absolutely brilliant. We'll be doing more events in Germany as well as soon as we can, COVID permitting. So hopefully I'll be able to see you guys in Germany too.
Yeah. Yeah. And you never been thinking about moving to London or anything?
Listen, I think London is an incredible city and I absolutely love it. But I was born and bred in the West Midlands. Gymshark's HQ is in the West Midlands. So I'm going to be spending the majority of my time in the West Midlands for the foreseeable future.
Okay. Do you care about football?
I do. I had a season ticket at Aston Villa. I don't know if you know the club. I'm a huge Villa fan and I have been my entire life. Who do you support?
In Germany or in England? I mean,
both.
In England, in Germany, it's Schalke. And in England, I look for the, you know, teams that have Germans on the squad. Right now, Liverpool with Jurgen Klopp and Chelsea with the German guys on the team. But I mean, the reason I'm asking is because, you know, there's, you know, like with you and your like hometown emotions, it feels like at some point you're going to invest into Aston Villa and become an Aston Villa.
Listen, I would love that, but it feels like you're paying a lot of money for a very big headache.
Yeah? Who owns Aston Villa?
Oh, I can't remember who owns it. They're very good owners, though. We've got some brilliant owners at the moment. The fans absolutely love them. They're investing in the club, so...
So no oligarchs, no...
I can't remember their names, if I'm honest. They're very, very wealthy.
But English people?
No, they're not English. I can't remember where they're from, but they're very, very... They're doing a great job, so everyone's very happy.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Ben.
Thank you for having me. It was great to chat.
All right. Take care.
Cheers. Enjoy your day. Speak soon.
Bye-bye. Buzz.